Everyone pretty exhausted from, I mean, I know I am exhausted and I did nothing today.
I shot guns.
Yeah. I watched my wife shoot guns like incredibly.
She's way better than you.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I took a nap and ate a lot of food and I didn't do anything, but I'm tired. But is everyone just, are you guys like doing okay? Are you kind of, you know, you can hang in there for a little bit?
They're college students.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of you didn't get to hear my story, but I have two sons and one just got married. He's 24. He graduated from Westmont College, and they both came out to California. They wanted to go to college out here. One's going to be a senior at Azusa, and he's 21. His name's Gavin, so Dylan and Gavin. And then I've been married 3 years to this lovely woman after I was widowed for 12 years. I lost the mother of my kids 15 years ago, and she and I were both out at PBC, and that's a longer story, but it was beautiful, a new season of life to be married again. Didn't think I'd ever be married again. And Sarah has two kids as well. Is Haley, how old are they? Yeah, 21 and 19?
22 and 19.
22 and 19. Yeah. One's a senior at Texas A&M in architecture and graphic design. And the other one worked at a ski area in Colorado last winter. So we're not sure what he's doing, but his name's Winston, so Haley and Winston. So anyway, it's great to be among you. I'm going to share about the incarnation tonight. We're going to talk about the significance of God becoming man. And I've never taught this material really before, and it's something that is profoundly changing the way I live and the way I do my work as a pastor. I shared a little bit this morning, and I'll share also as we go along that 15 years ago I no longer pastor at a church or within a church. I pastor out of my home in a neighborhood among a community of people among my neighbors. And I'd never heard of anyone doing that, you know, just basing themselves out of their home before. Has anyone heard of that? I ask that question sometimes because I'm curious, because I've heard of it a little bit more as the years go on, that people are starting to do some of this kind of ministry, very intentional ministry out of their home. But it's really thinking about how God came in to us in the form of humanity wearing flesh and dwelling among us, being God with us, that changed the way I do my work. And I'm still learning. There was nothing I learned in graduate school at seminary that taught me how to do this, how to pastor out of just with my actual neighbors. Not people who were coming to church because they thought they wanted to learn about God. But how do I love people that I rub shoulders with every day, that are just organically in my life? You know, whether they're fellow students that you guys have, or coworkers at Google or wherever you work. How can we learn to have the Jesus way about us, the Jesus aroma about our lives, that may cause someone to ask a question, and that you have no other motive other than just to love them. You have no other motive to get them to come to church or get them to come to youth group. But is it even possible to love people that way and have such an intentionality about serving them that would actually draw people? And yet I think that was Jesus's way. Did he ever bring anyone to the synagogue or to church? You know, no, not really. But so we're going to talk about that, and not just, you know, we all can and talk about the facts of the incarnation. What was the purpose of God becoming man? But I think we need what we're going to talk about on this, these next couple days is the method of the incarnation. Why did God choose that method at that specific time? And we're going to unpack that tonight. Just what was that method? How would we describe what God did and the way He did it, and how is that profound? And I put on. Does everyone have the notes for the talk tonight? I put on it just as a. A quote that at the very top of the first page that I heard just recently, that all of us like to worship the journey of Jesus. Yes.
Page 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, page 3. Thanks for doing page numbers. I'm already not following them. But all of us like to worship the journey of Jesus without doing the journey of Jesus. And that profoundly hit me too. I've wanted to study the journey of Jesus. I've wanted to teach the journey of Jesus. I've wanted to understand what He did and how He did it. But what would it look like for me? Obviously, I don't need to go and die on the cross. But what would it look like for me and you to imitate? And be more intentional about what it is would be like to do His journey on a daily basis. What does daily incarnational life look like? And but first, let's talk just briefly about what are we talking about with incarnation? Kind of a fancy word or a religious word, but the definition is a person who embodies deity, spirit, or an abstract quality. Just a person who embodies God or spirit and or a quality about them. Also, I wanted to just read a couple of verses. This is the beginning of the book of Hebrews. It says, God, after He spoke long ago to the fathers and prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days, and that's even the days we're in, has spoken to us in His Son, whom He appointed heir of all things, through whom also He made the world. And He is the radiance of His glory and the exact representation of His nature. And He upholds all things by the word of His power. When He made purification for sins, He sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Here's God's Son, who was participating in making the world, it said. And John 1 tells us that also, doesn't it? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And then the Word came and dwelt among us. The Word became flesh. But there's really been two incarnations. There was when God created the world, that was really the first incarnation. He said, I am going to express myself through creation. And then John is a genius, and he writes in his gospel. He starts with Genesis, the phrase that starts with Genesis, in the beginning, right? And there's like a second Big Bang, and that was Jesus. And that he wants us to know that it is just as profound as the creation of the world that God became a man and became one of us and dwelled among us. Colossians 3 says this, or I'm sorry, Colossians 1. For He delivered us from the domain of darkness, transferred us to the kingdom of His beloved Son, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. In him, all things were created. So Jesus was before all time. All things were created through him. Both in the heavens and the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him, and he is before all things. In him, all things hold together. He's the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning, the firstborn of the dead. He is himself, might come to the first place in everything. It was for the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him. This Jesus is way bigger than just a Sunday school Jesus. He was there at creation, and then he became one of us. And as the scripture was read in our worship time, he emptied himself, laid aside all of his privileges as God to wear our skin, to be tempted in every way that we are, to be flesh and bones, to be an embryo, and to be a baby, a fragile baby, being born in a natural way. God self-limited, he self-emptied, so that he could experience everything we have. And we'll talk a little bit more in a little bit about that descending path of God. But first, I want to throw it out to all of us. Now, what are the basic facts of the incarnation, the purpose for which God incarnated himself and became one of us? What are the basic facts that we know? What is the reason for him doing that? Sorry? Say again. Okay. What else? Why? Why did God do this? This whole thing? Yeah. What else do we know about why God did this? Became one of us. Could he have done it some other way? Give us an example of how to live. Yeah. If you're the God of the universe, let me put this a different way. If you're the God of the universe, and yes, you've sent prophets, you've sent holy men, you've sent other, but now you're deciding, I'm going to send the exact representation of myself to mankind. I'm going to send myself to these people. Let's just think, this is hard for us to think, but what was the strategy of God? How did he do it? If you wanted to reach and reveal who you are, and believe me, you have one shot in doing this. This was plan A for God, to reveal to us who he was, how much he loved us, and to woo us into relationship with him. But you've got one shot. Was there a plan B of God? There's no plan B. This is kind of a strange, kind of a crazy thing to do. You've got one shot to reveal to mankind everything about yourself. Jesus was the exact representation of who God is. Could it be that God also wasn't just showing us who Jesus was and the theology of what Jesus came to do, but there's something profound in the strategy, in the methodology of God doing it the way he does. And is that something also that we are to imitate? That we are to follow, and that methodology of God to become one of us and be risk rejection and just do it in one shot. And then let's talk about some of the elements. What did he do? How did he do it when he came? There's no wrong answer here. It's almost hard to think about. What were some of the elements of God doing it the way he did, of the incarnation? How did he do it? And what was the way of the incarnation? Lydia?
He came in poverty instead of like as a king.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. I know we're all tired and this is late, but yeah. Okay. Could have done it a different way. He didn't have to be, you know, be born in an obscure town to a poor couple that were not even married. Could have done it in a different way and not risk his reputation on being born to an unwed couple, right? Kind of a strange way. What are some other ways of the incarnation? Some thought. How did God do this? Okay. Kind of a scandalous thing. Put himself out there with a scandalous thing, with a virgin birth, that is still somewhat not understandable to people. What are some other aspects of the incarnation?
It was very countercultural. He did a lot of things that people thought he would break the rules for, or he was doing things that people considered lowly or unclean. Just kind of breaking out of the status quo of following traditions for the sake of.
He kind of hung out with the wrong people, too, right? He didn't go to the movers and shakers. He didn't go. He went to the moved and shaken. You know, he didn't go to the centers of power. Could have gone to Rome, right? And as God, he could have turned Rome upside down. But where did he spend most of his time? Galilee. Pretty out of the way. I mean, we know it because it's in Scripture, but it was an out-of-the-way place. He was in an obscure place, like this ranch. You know? He wasn't in Silicon Valley. Who did he hang out with? Who did he collect as his followers that would then, in the one shot that God had, who did he collect as the people that would then spread the word and continue it on?
The disciples.
What were they like? Would they have been the people that you would have chosen if you had one shot as God? One shot as God to spread the word. What were they like? Yeah. Yeah, he was no picnic. No one liked him, Matthew. The Romans didn't like him, the Jews didn't like him, and he was a Jew. There was a zealot, Simon the Zealot. He was a terrorist of his time. No one liked him. What, anything else that was just, it's pretty interesting that God, the way that God went about doing this incarnation, We know the right Sunday school answers. Yes, he went to, he had to become like us and be tempted in every way like man, but not with sin. And then he could be the lamb to go to the slaughter and atone for all of mankind's sin. We know all of that. But we're talking about this weekend is the way that he went about this. And we're going to talk about different skills, different aspects of this really unusual way of reaching mankind and reaching your neighbor. We're going to talk about hospitality, what that really means, about loving the stranger. We're going to talk about being present. We're going to be talking about listening. We're going to talk about seeing people and being so attentive to people's minds and hearts and being present with them and lingering long enough in someone's life, even if it's one person. The economy of God is so unusual that he only chose 12 guys to pour himself into for 3 years. And if you had one shot at God as God to do this, I mean, we're used to this story, but this story is crazy. It is really almost stupid that God chose to do this way. And there was no plan B. It wasn't like, okay, Judas betrayed me, so now I'm just gonna call down all of heaven and reveal myself to all of mankind and force them to know me. Because I am God after all. Now, this is such a risky way to do it, and it amazes me that he would do it this way. And yet, how does that impact our lives in the church? And if you think that it's really inefficient for God to have not done some big stadium event, some big, larger event, that's so inefficient, think about this. A friend of ours, of Sarah and I, had her graduate school student in math do this math problem. But if I were to tell two people this year, just two people, about Jesus, just tell my story to two people this year, and I did that each year for the next 20 years, and each one of those people that I told two people each year for the next 20 years, till 2036. How many people would be touched? Any idea?
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands?
It's like compound interest.
3,486,782,401. Okay, let's just say 300 people. 300 people. Us and, 260 more. Did that for told two people for the next 20 years, and they told two people. That would be 1 trillion people, 46 billion on and on. I know, it blows your mind. But this, so if sometimes we our Western minds, our way of thinking about things is that bigger is always better. We need to have a big program that is an attractional model, so that people will come to church, people will come and hear about God. That wasn't God's model. That wasn't his plan. It was just to infect the lives of 12 people who would infect the lives of a few others, and then and on and on. And that's how the good news spread all throughout Asia Minor, and that's how God's building his church today. I don't think he's changed his strategy. Do you? And yet we in the American church and in our Western way of thinking, we say, well, that maybe the incarnation was for back then. What Jesus did, what God did in Jesus was really quaint, really interesting, and you know, with those 12 misfit guys, you know. But then some explosion happened, and now we don't have to do it that way. We can use modern methods to reach people. And yet I think what we're going to talk about this weekend is that God's method has never changed. And there's really simple and but very intentional things that we can do each and every day to be incarnational in how we live. That I don't think the incarnation was a one-time event for that time, and that it doesn't apply to us today. And it's kind of just rethinking how we do things. In the first, I think it's, is it page 4? The first page you have there?
5.
Page 5? This is something written by PBC's founding father, Ray Stedman, from the Book of Acts. I'm going to start just halfway through that first paragraph. Jesus as a man came to begin something, to do and to teach, and the record of that beginning is in the Gospels. But Luke clearly implies that this second book is the continuation of what Jesus began to do. In a very real sense, Acts is not the Acts of Christians, but the continuing Acts of Jesus. It is an account of what Jesus continues to do and to teach. In the Gospels, he did it in his own physical body. But in the book of Acts, he's doing it through the bodies of men and women who are indwelt by his life. That's you and me, people. Whether in the Gospels or in the Acts, incarnation is the secret strategy by which God changes the world. Whenever God wants to get a message across to mankind, he does not merely send someone to announce it. His final way of driving it home is to dress the message in flesh and blood. God takes a life and aims it in a certain direction, and then by the manifestation of his own life through the blood and flesh of a human being, makes clear what he has to say. That is the strategy of the book of Acts. It's the record of incarnation, of men and women possessed by Jesus Christ and manifesting his life every day. For this reason, the book of Acts is an unfinished book, for it is still being written. Acts closes abruptly with the account of Paul living in a rented house in Rome. It almost sounds as if you could turn the next page and begin another adventure. That we now are the book of Acts, and we live the adventure. Like, we are the next chapters being written in the incarnation. God wants to use each one of us to continue the Acts story of Jesus indwelling you and then incarnating that to maybe even one person in the next decade of your life. And that would be God's efficiency. That would be a beautiful thing to him. So we are that next page. And then also C.S. Lewis said that the incarnation is the central miracle asserted by Christians. You don't have this, but I just want to read another quote by Dorothy Sayers. She said, "For whatever reason God chose to make man, He is limited and suffering and subject to sorrows and death. He had the honesty and courage to take his own medicine." He's talking about God, that God took his own medicine. Whatever the game is that God's playing with creation, he has kept his own rules and played fair. He can exact nothing from man that he has not exacted from himself. He has himself gone through the whole human experience, from the trivial irritations of family life and the cramping restrictions of hard work and lack of money, to the worst horrors of pain and humiliation, defeat, despair, and death. When he was a man, he played the man. He was born in poverty and died in disgrace and thought it was well worthwhile. God took his own medicine of just becoming, putting his money where his mouth was and becoming like us. And we follow suit with him. If you could turn to the page also that have their, let's see what page it is. I have just different pages on mine. I'm sorry about that. But it's page 6, The Art of the Incarnation. We know from the Philippians verse there that we are being encouraged to not just think that the incarnation was a one-time thing, but we are to have this attitude in ourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who also existed in the form, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but he emptied himself. We are to have that attitude in ourselves. That's what Paul's teaching is here. It wasn't a one-time thing. And then the I love this translation of John 1:14, that the Word, the true light, was coming into the world, and the world did not know him. Then the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. That's Eugene Peterson's translation of God became flesh and dwelt among us. And when I read that translation, and 15 years ago, kind of changed the way I do pastoring, to do it in my neighborhood, to do it out of my house, I thought, well, I need to put my money where my mouth is and see if that's even possible. Can I love people? Can I love my neighbors just right where I live? A friend of mine used to say, well, if it doesn't work at home, don't take it on the road. And so I didn't know if it would work. It could work at home, you know? And so I'm still learning. That was 15 years ago. I'm still learning how to not use religious words, not use church language with my neighbors, and just to love them. And I do it through one-on-one one-on-one mentoring. I do it through small groups and that meet in homes. Sarah and I have dinners for 6 once a week in our home, where we invite people that we don't know very well to come to our home and just get to know them over dinners. And we're very intentional about that. I mean, try doing that once a week, with that kind of thing. I mean, go have coffee intentionally with someone you don't know very well once a week, or whatever it is. And we'll talk more about what hospitality is tomorrow, really what that looks like. But I really don't believe that we can improve on God's strategy of incarnation. He entered into a very specific time, specific place, specific location, and he sustained that for 33 years. And there's a reason why we have a specific place that we live, specific people that we know, and there's something in that. God, also, one name for God is Emmanuel, God with us. And, you know, it wasn't that God said, okay, I'm going to send an email to you or a leaflet from heaven saying, here's 10 ways to get out of the pit. You know, what God's style of incarnation was, no, I'm going to get in the pit with you, and when you're ready, we'll walk out together. I'm going to get into right where your pain is, right where your loneliness is, right where you struggle. I'm going to stay there and sustain relationship with you long enough, right where you're anxious, right where you're fearful, and I'm going to sustain that friendship with you until we walk out together. And he's never in a hurry, and that's God's style. Jim Elliot said, wherever you are, be all there. And this is really hard for us because we live in such a world of distraction, such a world of wanting to just move quickly from one thing to the next. I wanted to just show us a little clip now. John, can we show that first one?
Yep. You guys might have trouble seeing it. You might have to...
I'm going to move this. Can everyone see that?
I don't know where they are.
Okay.
That's right. Oh.
If you look up an image of the Earth and Moon, you're going to get a picture where they're quite close together, something like that. But in reality, the Earth and Moon are about that far apart. That is the Earth and the Moon to scale. Taking the same concept, but for the solar system, every single picture of the solar system that we ever encounter is not to scale. If you put the orbits to scale on a piece of paper, the planets become microscopic, and you won't be able to see them. There is literally not an image that adequately shows you what it actually looks like from out there. The only way to see a scale model of the solar system is to build one. Welcome to Black Rock Desert. This is Alex. I'm Wiley. He's going to be behind the camera. I'm going to be probably making a lot of mistakes on camera. We have 36 hours to measure the distances, trace out the orbits, and set up a time-lapse shot from up on top of a nearby mountain. To create a scale model with an Earth only as big as this marble, you need 7 miles of empty space. So that's why we're here.
Why did you guys come?
I don't have a job.
At this scale, the sun is a meter and a half, so about that big around. So we are driving right now to Mercury, and we've arrived. Venus is the same size as Earth. I have the world in my pocket somewhere. And Earth. And this is Mars. Got a couple of robots rolling around on that one. Once the time-lapse is ready, we'll drive each orbit with a light. Hopefully, you'll be able to tell just how big they really are. Onward to the outer planets. Jupiter. Tiny light out there is our sun, just over a mile away. Mm-hmm. sounds way, way out there now.
About 7 a.m. We just woke up right before the sun's about to rise.
We are on Earth's orbit. Wiley is over there holding our sun.
Cue the dramatic sunrise music.
So if we've made our model correctly, your perspective from where Earth is on the model will match your perspective from standing on real Earth. So if you look back at the sun, you will see that the model sun and the real sun are the exact same size. And that's how you can tell that the proportions are correct. There are 24 people in the entire history of the human species, billions of people, who have actually seen the full circle of the Earth with their own eyes.
Following the breakfast, the astronauts went to the suit room where they donned their spacesuit.
This is man's attempt to get to the moon.
Zero. We have liftoff. Liftoff at 7:51.
In Earth orbit, the horizon is just slightly curved. When you head on out to the moon, that horizon slowly curves around and upon itself, and all of a sudden you're looking at something that is very strange, but it is very, very familiar.
Oh, look at that picture over there. Wow, that's pretty.
You can put your thumb up, and you can hide the Earth behind your thumb. Everything that you've ever known, all behind your thumb.
Not any bigger than that, way up there.
It's really beautiful. You can cry.
That's what I really wanted to try and capture. We are on a marble floating in the middle of nothing. When you sort of come face to face with that, it's staggering.
Think about what they were presenting to you. How did that strike you?
It's crazy.
Did anyone have kind of a view of the solar system like they said at first? But it's so, the magnitude of God's Earth, the way He created things, is just way different than we grew up thinking. We don't have an ability to scale what God did, you know, because we live in such a finite space here, right? I think it's the same with Jesus. I don't think we have Jesus scaled properly. I don't think we have how God reached us at one point in time, one point in history, as a vulnerable baby, and then as a 30-year-old man, as an adolescent. He had to be an adolescent just like we and figure out his life just like we do. God self-limited. He self-emptied himself of everything he knew. And he was there at creation. He was there before anything was created. He's pre-existed. He's from eternity past. And I don't think we have the profound nature of how he reached you and I and asked us to trust him through the life of another person who perhaps incarnated Jesus to you. For me, it was when I was 15 years old and a Young Life leader rode up a chairlift, as I mentioned this morning, listening to my dumb questions. And then he stayed in my life for the next decade. And I'm going to read you another story. So this weekend is all about us learning maybe one thing about the method of God's way of reaching us that we could then apply to our lives and take from here. And it's simple. It's not a program, but it's a simple act of love that maybe we didn't think really would reach anyone. It's not effective, but I think God's asking us to rethink that. I love this little story. Joe was a drunk who was miraculously converted at a mission, downtown mission. Prior to his conversion, he'd gained the reputation of being a dirty wino for whom there was no hope, only a miserable existence in the ghetto. But following his conversion to a new life in Christ, everything changed. Joe became the most caring person that anyone associated with the mission had ever known. Joe spent his days and nights hanging out at the mission, doing whatever needed to be done. There was never anything that he was asked to do that he considered beneath him, whether it was cleaning up the vomit left by some violently sick alcoholic or scrubbing the toilets after careless men left the men's room. Joe did what was asked with a smile on his face and seeming gratitude for the chance to help. He could be counted on to feed feeble men who wandered off the street and into the mission, and to undress and tuck into bed men who were too out of it to care for themselves. One evening, when the director of the mission was delivering his evening message to the usual crowd of still and sullen men with drooped heads, there was one man who looked up, came down the aisle to the altar, and knelt to pray, crying out to God to help him to change. The repentant drunk kept shouting, "Oh God, make me like Joe. Make me like Joe. Make me like Joe." And the director leaned over and said, "Son, it would be better if you prayed, 'Make me like Jesus.'" The man looked up with a quizzical expression on his face and said, "Is he like Joe?" Like we may be the only picture of Jesus that someone sees. We can incarnate that to someone else. I'd like to, this weekend I'm going to be giving you different pictures and examples of what our incarnation looks like, because I think we have a hard time understanding it other than who Jesus became. How can I live that way? What does it look like to daily have an incarnational methodology about what I do? Can we play one more?
Yeah.
And here's another example of just incarnational thinking. It's not the next one, it's the third one.
Unbreakable.
Yeah. And maybe there's been a TED talk on this as well. And I'll just let you watch it, and then we'll talk about it. It's about daughters whose fathers...
And finally tonight, you're about to meet some little girls whose eyes are filled with stars, no matter that their father-daughter dance is behind bars. Our Steve Osensami takes us into a room with a lot of regret, but so many dreams.
All of the prisoners at the Richmond City Jail getting ready for their big event admit they made poor choices in the especially for their children.
I'm definitely failing as a parent right now, just not being outside of life.
Julian Edwards is serving 4 years for drug distribution. Joey Atkins is awaiting trial for illegal gun possession. And Ronell Glasgow is serving 7 years for selling drugs.
It's my first time I've ever had a suit, obviously.
But they told me that none of it is their daughter's fault.
Oh,
those are pretty.
At home, I watched 8-year-old Amaya Thomas getting ready too.
I get to touch him and I get to hug him and I get to kiss him.
Oh, right.
Sheriff here says he's reminding these men why they need to stay out of jail by inviting these little girls to the city lockup to come dance with their fathers.
They are not hardcore criminals, and they can be very good citizens, and the best way to make a good citizen is to make good fathers.
Dressed up, you forget they're serving hard time until they break down into tears when their daughters come bouncing past the steel doors. The dance only lasted an hour or two, but in this short time, in this small room, these young girls had real moments with their fathers. 7-year-old Rynasia Glasgow tried to explain.
It's so good and
So you love your dad very much, huh?
Yeah.
You love him this big? This big? This big?
When he does time, his daughter does time. And he told us he'll never let that happen to her again. Steve Osunzami, ABC News, Richmond, Virginia.
Hey, Scout, do you think you could tell us what happened?
Has anyone seen
that? I don't know.
Sorry. It's still good.
There's a ministry started with this woman that is trying to connect daughters who don't have fathers with their fathers in father-daughter dances. And there were several daughters that said, I can't invite my father because they're in jail. And that could have been the end of it, right? It's like, oh, well, that's too bad. You know, but what was the incarnational thinking? That this woman, that she's not mentioned in that clip, but she said, no, let's take the dance to the jail. That seems like, I mean, that's just incarnational thinking. That's someone saying, there's got to be another way. We need to go where the people are. Wouldn't that have been what Jesus did? It is what Jesus did. It just took talking to the warden, getting permission, taking those extra steps, but thinking, let's not stop at no. You know, we just can't include certain dads. No, let's go to where they are. It takes creative thinking. Different way of going about thinking about life. And where do any of us start in living this way? It's not just the professionals, the paid professionals, the pastors that should be doing this. Every one of us are called to make these small little choices. And on page 9, we're about to wrap up. On page 9, if you look at that, this is something that Jesus said. Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son does also in like manner. I think what we're talking about this weekend is how can we be like Jesus and do things like he does it. And not just to say, what would Jesus do? It's not a what question we're talking about this weekend, but how. How did Jesus do things that was just so remarkably different than we normally see. And it it takes humility. God relinquished his rights as God in order to meet us right where we live. And now he's calling us to do that with one another, and with people that you know that are on the doorstep of your life. Like, where can we start? You don't have to go find people. These people already are in our lives. I'm convinced of it. There's people on the doorstep of your life, in the landscape of your life right now, that we are called to learn how to have the welcoming presence of Jesus and welcome them into friendship without any hook to be able to have them come to church. It's not that. If they want to, great. But it's about just entering in, going to where they live, going to where their pain is, and praying for them and just spending time with them. Let's end with this on page 11 and 12. We're end with this as kind of a it's kind of a meditation, kind of a reflection and prayer. I'd like you to just read page 11 silently. This is kind of a way, some different phrases that humility looks like. Take a couple minutes and just read that. Can you just turn to a neighbor or group up in two or three people, and just share with one another what aspects of humility, what you just are reading here, what are one or two things that you have no idea how to do, or that are things that are a real challenge to you? In order to become more like Jesus, to have that attitude of humility. So just share with one another observations about this list that you just read. What is a challenge to you? Let's just take 3 or 4 minutes just to share with a small group. Okay, guys. What were one or two top? We were talking over here with Kevin and Dean about how counterintuitive all these things are, you know. And I mean, Kevin said, and they're the next level. It's like, you know, this isn't where we live now, you know. But and yet it's like. This is kind of the character of Jesus, and how is being like this, how can that change the world? How can that change the world? It's so counterintuitive. This incarnational way of being humble like Jesus, how is that going to change anything? There's no power behind this, is there? What were one or two top things in some of your groups?
Yeah. Don't take pride in praising man.
What else? What were ones that you guys singled out and were talking about?
Third one, be content that others think well of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that one. Yeah. Do you think Jesus was content in that?
Yeah.
Amazingly. Yeah. The God of the universe who, like, he should have pulled rank on everyone and played a trump card or something. But I'm God. But he's content that his reputation would be trashed, you know, and to die a humiliating death. Worst kind of death. What else? What were top choices there? Or things you talked about? One or two more.
Be content to be unnoticed. Don't worry about yourself.
Yeah, that's hard.
Well, it's also like, it can be easy sometimes to apply these in a short-term sense. Where like, well, people will figure out eventually, like,
yeah.
I'm really great or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, and then you're like, wait, you just completely turn it over, like, it's wrong at that point, right? Like, it's just, for all eternity, like, be content. Yeah. Don't excuse your mistakes.
How do we do that? We do that in so many different ways. Yeah. Why don't you just, let's close our time with just in your same little group, just flip over to the next page. And just read, make this a prayer. Just read this prayer out loud as a group together. And just know that you're praying this to the Lord. You just and make this a prayer for your weekend. Okay, for this weekend, just pray this out loud as a group, and we'll just end with that time, end our time with them. So just maybe read it through once, and then just pray it through as a group. Okay.